Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Everybody, welcome to Used Wigs Radio. This is the year of our Lord 2010. This is recording session number 71. This year, Used Wigs Radio, we promise to explode with flavor. That's our new catchphrase. What do you guys think?
It's the year we make contact, isn't it?
It's the year we make contact? Okay, I like that. You know what? Let's put it out there. We need a good tagline right now because people are like, Used Wigs Radio.
Blah. Download some friends was one that you
download.
Came up with. Yep. Years ago, I think that's strong. But you think we're ready for a new one for
2010? I think
that
was something.
Stale.
Yeah.
You know what that is from, right? The year we make contact.
Yeah.
2010, like 2001, Space Odyssey, and then. Did you ever read 2001?
The book?
Yeah.
No.
Why would
it's
you read?
Incredible.
But
incredible.
Why would you read it?
It's an incredible book. It's a wonderful.
Somebody
movie.
Took a boring book and made a cool movie out of it.
Do you like the movie?
I like the
movie.
The
movie's great too.
Yes.
But the book is incredible.
A lot of people, you know, do maintain, and I'm not saying that this is that I agree, but a lot of people maintain that the movie is very, very, very boring. Now, the thing is, you have to put it in the context of when it was shot, and, like, you know, those anti-gravity scenes and stuff like that was completely groundbreaking.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing,
but
visually.
But, you know, in the long haul now, if you go back, especially now with everything that's happened since, and you watch that movie, people who didn't see it a long time ago say that it's very boring. Because
it's
lots
poetically
of,
boring.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be boring. It's space.
It's like Koyaanisqatsi or something like that. Like, it's just these long shots of things that you either appreciate for the artistic...
Mm-hmm. But it's gorgeous. I mean, that movie is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
That's a piece of artwork.
But
a lot of people
are not watching films for that.
Well, that movie's good. But the book is incredible. I recommend both. But although I've never read 2010.
I didn't even see that. Did you see
me neither.
No.
Yeah. No. Why don't we just stop this podcast and go watch it?
Russ,
get some popcorn.
Kubrick didn't do that. That was somebody else, right?
That's the one where Yoda...
I'm fairly certain that he didn't do that movie.
So you know what's funny? You said that, yet by today's standards, it would be considered boring by some. An example, if you watch Rear Window, which people are like, you are going to be on the edge of your seat. This is the most, you know, chilling, suspenseful movie. I watched it, and my mouth hurt from yawning. I was so bored.
You're like, you didn't like that movie?
Oh,
I didn't see
boring.
It.
I think that's a great movie.
Judged by today's standards, maybe I'm a child of, you know, a little more... there's great movies that are suspense or slowly built into by today's standards. That, I don't get Hitchcock. Sorry. But then again, I don't like black and white movies. I like one black and white movie, that's it.
Are you serious about
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Which is the
one?
Will we be able to get this?
No, I like Manchurian Candidate. The original. I'm not a deep guy when it comes to movies. I don't really...
It's a Wonderful Life? You don't like that movie? You ever see Casablanca?
Yes, I have.
And you don't like that?
No, I really don't. I'm not a real movie guy.
Schindler's List?
That was funny.
That was funny.
No, this is our first podcast of the new year, 2010.
And the new millennium or not?
Yes, it is the new millennium.
Because people are still debating about that, depending on...
Yeah, it's true, they are.
Okay, but I feel like it could be. It should be.
Should be. Oh, yeah.
Wait, no. Not new millennium, new decade.
I mean, new decade.
Mm-hmm.
Not new millennium.
Come on.
I know millenniums and decades mix up, but it is a new decade.
Do you have a resolution for the new decade? Not just for the year, but for the next 10 years, is there something you're going to change about your life that will make Todd Marone a better person, that will make Russ Stark an even more better person?
Do you have one?
It's weird. I don't think I could be any more awesome.
Yeah.
Why even try?
I've never done the resolution.
I never have either. And it amazes me that people... but you see, you know, it's funny. You see via the Twitter and the Facebook, people who have and tacitly are kind of posting things about things they're trying to achieve. Even though they didn't come out and they're like, hey, this year I'm going to go to the gym. Then you read... posts like, oh my god, I've never done a stomach crunch in my life, I'm dying.
Yeah.
And you know, like 2 months later,
but I don't know about you guys, but I don't do resolutions, but I do kind of anti-resolutions, in that as something comes to a close, whether it be the close of the summer or the close of the year or the close of a particularly long break that I might have, I will stray from my normally productive and healthy lifestyle.
Oh, okay.
No, so it's not a resolution to say, like, oh, I'm going to start exercising or eating well, because I typically do, and I have for many years.
Cake.
Right, but I do at the end of, you know, like, yeah. 2 or 3 days prior to the end of the year thing, like, you know what, I'm going to eat whatever I want, I want to play video games, I'm not doing anything, I'm not, do you feel that way? Do you do that?
Oh, yeah, I do that. Yeah. Like, yes.
So, actually, like, the last 4 years have been like that for me, unfortunately.
It's kind of a counter resolution, you know? You're actually, you're resolving to be terrible. Before you return to greatness.
But here's the thing. If you live a healthy lifestyle, and you can't be like a crazy lunatic about it.
Right.
So if you do something for 6 months and you bust your ass, that day comes, you're done. The next couple of weeks, let's just live a little different life there. Let's, you know, have beers almost every night, you know. Chocolate cake, put that into the mix, laying around, having an extra sandwich at lunch. Sure, why not? Try cocaine. It's just something that you'd put into there, you want to do something a little different. Yeah. And I call that the beautiful month of December.
No one
December.
No one starts cocaine on January 1st.
So,
very true.
What are we drinking here, fellas?
Wow!
Did anybody take a sip yet?
I saw that Jeff did.
Oh, Jeff's already halfway through.
And then I
haven't even tried it yet.
It's delicious.
Wow!
You'll love it.
I'm sure that I.
Wow!
Will.
The drunk guy's halfway through. He couldn't control himself.
This is a gift from my brother Tim T. Diddley, as I call him.
Is this Kentucky T. Diddley?
Yes, that's right. He lives outside of Louisville. This is Kentucky Bourbon Barrel
Ale.
Is that it? Yeah, just Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. Ale aged in oak barrels. That's about it.
It tastes a lot more like bourbon than ale to me. It's like
now, I gotta tell you, it has the Innocent Gun kind of beer, but not really more alcohol than beer kind of flavor.
Wow. Before I even got to my mouth, you could smell the bourbon.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
If it didn't, really if nice. It was slightly less carbonated, I wouldn't be able to differentiate it's really, from bourbon.
Great finish. Very smooth, I'm gonna say.
It'll warm you up, this one.
Yeah, this is nice. Any percent alcohol on here?
I can't find it.
8.19%.
Damn. That's not so bad. It tastes stronger than that.
Yeah.
It does taste stronger than that, yeah. It's very good. And thank you, Tim. Speaking of, the Grundle's Chom Jadico has a case of 25 delicious beers for us we need to pick up. The thing is, we have to drink them all on the air our next show.
So in one?
I think we could do it.
Could we do 25?
Ross
is good for 1.5.
And then you and I. Yeah, I think you and I.
23 for you.
If we had
if we do it on a Friday.
If we did it on a Friday, we could. You know, if we brought Jandek Phil in, you know what? We should probably bring in the guys for a show before. There's a big announcement. Why don't we play a song and we'll come back and talk about a big announcement for Use Wigs Live Part 2. Let's see. Oh, I'm very excited about this one, guys. This is a band, Aloha. They're on Polyvinyl Records. They put out 4 excellent albums, but they haven't put out one, I think, in almost 5 years. And they have a new one coming out in February called Home Acres. And this is the first single off it called Moonless March. Then we're back, people. That was Aloha, the band, with Moonless March off their new CD, Home Acres. You can check that out at www.polyvinylrecords.com.
So what was this announcement you had for us, Todd?
Is there a little announcement, Todd?
I'm actually, you may have noticed that my voice is a little bit different. I've been working on my...
yodeling.
My Kathleen Turner. I've been reinventing myself vocally just for this announcement. So everyone remembers at the beginning of last summer, we had a live event called Used Wigs Live.
It was fantastic.
And it actually was very well received. It was very well attended, and people, I think, had a ball. Russ and I especially do a lot of live events between the music and the art, and we drag a lot of people to those events, and we're very appreciative. At least speaking for myself, and I can speak for Russ probably too.
Yes.
For the people that go out, and I had a lot of people say after that, like, you know, hey, we always have fun when you ask us to come somewhere, but this was really, really great. You guys had to do that again.
But this time, so, we need.
Yeah, I actually kind of had mixed emotions about the overwhelming response to that.
Sure.
And kind of like in the context of like, you know, we've gone a lot of your things.
Right. And I didn't look at my watch once this time.
But anyway, so what it's worth.
Yeah, I didn't fake a phone call from the babysitter to leave.
It was a lot of fun. So anyway, the place was packed, but it was a coffee shop, and it was Milk Boy, who we have a great relationship with, and we like those guys very much. But you know, it didn't have the menu that we were looking for. It didn't have the ambiance, perhaps, that we deserve. So now we're bringing it, Used Wigs Live, to one of the coolest, hippest, beeriest, foodiest, musiciest, college radioiest venues in the entire, maybe the world. I don't even want to say the city.
Let's say world.
Maybe the world.
East Coast, definitely.
Yeah. And this is the WXPN World Cafe Live venue.
Yes, very nice. That so, will be what date, Todd? What are we talking about here?
You probably you have your calendar out as you listen to this. So
yes.
Let me just give you the date. Block in March 19th, 2010. Because that's when Used Wigs Live takes our live show to the stage, to the upstairs stage of WXPN World Cafe Live.
Fantastic bar, great seating, two levels, very nice stage, overlooks the river right there in Philadelphia. There's ample parking. It's right near the University of Pennsylvania.
If we had an unlimited budget,
yeah,
and we had to build a venue for Used Wigs Live, it would be exactly where we are going to be having it in March.
I gotta say, I'm really excited because we actually went out, Team Used Wigs, the three of us, and our stage manager, Jandek Phil.
And Kenjamin Franklin.
No, oh, I think he was there in spirit. He was there in the emails.
He was on the email list.
And then I think he got hung up in an airport somewhere. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we went out and looked at other places, but basically we wanted to be in the city and we wanted somewhere cool. And we were thinking of all these places, and then it just kind of all of a sudden fell in our lap, and then we approached them, and then they realized the power of Used Wigs Radio. And
it's
they
the said, perfect blend of live.
Yes.
And actually, not to name names, but the place that we left that evening thinking we were going to do it compared to where we are.
Holy
going
shit. Let's just say we're going to settle and settle hard.
Thinking like, this place has beer.
Yeah.
But man, so much more to offer. And you know, like, just what a very flattering and exciting partnership, because WXPN is really one of the very few things that's right about Philadelphia radio. Maybe the only thing.
It is the only thing. Yeah, it really is.
So it's really very exciting and flattering to forge a relationship with these guys.
Yeah, so that means you guys all have to come out and you know, support us. And we are putting together a wonderful show. We are booking guests right now. And we can't really say who it is. We're going to have this nailed down by the end of January. And once we come out, be prepared for an all-out media blitz. Do you think you get a lot of emails from Todd, Russ, and Jeff now? Oh, my God. You might want to close down your social media accounts because we're going to hit you hard. I'm excited.
All righty. Let's hit a song.
Song? Todd, I think you're up with songs. Something about mints, Todd.
Well, I think Russ is aware of this band, the Starlight Mints. They've been around, as far as I know, since 2000. And their first album really struck a chord with me, and I listened to it pretty obsessively through 2000. And it's The Dream That Stuff Was Made Of.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had subsequent albums, Build On Squares, Drow Town and The Change Remains is the 2009 release, and I believe this song comes from that album, but it is their Daytrotter release, and it is called Hold That Tiger. That was Hold That Tiger by Starlight Mints, and that was laid down in the Daytrotter Studios. Thanks, of course, to Daytrotter and the Starlight Mints.
Daytrotter basically just gets anyone they want now. You know what I mean? It used to be people who are coming through on a tour would stop there.
Yeah.
Now I think people are just flying out.
Are they making money on that? They're still.
Well, they were bought. No, they were. Well, they were bought. You mean they're not just Daytrotter anymore? They were bought by Wolfgang's Vault, which is basically a pretty big company that.
And you know, they have a segment on XPN, on WXPN, which is, of course, the building that we'll be holding. So they're played in Philadelphia on that station.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It's like the circle of musical life.
Yes. Russ, do you have something you want to talk about? I'm looking at my list right here.
Yeah, there's a couple things. So, have you guys seen, there's two new trailers out. One of them is the trailer to Iron Man 2. Have you seen that, Todd?
I have not seen Iron Man.
I liked Iron Man.
Have you watched the trailer for Iron Man 2 yet?
I think I did. Refresh my memory, because...
Well, it doesn't get much into it, except, like, Mickey Rourke is in it.
Yeah, I did see it, and I wasn't happy.
Yeah, I don't know what to think yet.
All right, here are a couple of points I have about Iron Man 2. I'm really tired of all the movies like Spider-Man, their scary villains aren't scary demonic enough. They just kind of make them like, hey, it's so-and-so, it's Mickey Rourke. And I'm like, you know what, Mickey Rourke's never really scared me, and wow, he has like giant, you know, electrical wires.
He's Whiplash,
yeah, and he just whips, you know. I'm getting a little tired, and maybe it was the Sherlock Holmes of the snark. Like, I really like Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. And like, you know, and I think his character Tony Stark, you know, he's just very self confident and just like the way. But I don't know. I think it's just, this might be a little too much.
Well, the thing that drives me nuts about all these comic book movies is how they keep rebooting the series and they keep changing and swapping out actors.
Yeah, because they got rid of right.
So I think, and I don't know exactly what went down, but the fact that they swapped out, what is it, Terrence Howard
for Don Cheadle, right?
Is ridiculous,
right?
Like, you know, to me, that's like changing the husband on Bewitched. It's just that kind of stuff. You know, we're all expected to just roll with it, but it changes the flavor. Right?
You are capable of suspending disbelief that they have the superpowers, but when it comes to a slightly different face playing,
you don't agree with me though.
Like, I don't know that I've really liked a superhero movie, frankly.
All right, but before we say that, so let's go back to one of the things that made, for instance, let's level the playing field with the three original Star Wars movies. One of the things that made them so endearing was that the cast was the same throughout.
Yeah, I agree.
And if they had swapped that out or changed people, the flavor changes whether you like it or not, right? And so did you also hear that as of like just a couple days ago, Tobey Maguire dropped out of the next Spider-Man?
Congratulations.
Yeah, but they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And instead they're going to do a prequel.
But well, more important,
existed before Tobey Maguire, and it certainly should exist afterwards, right?
Yeah, but
I mean, does the franchise completely crumble because Tobey Maguire is not going
to be there was no reason for that to have happened.
Well, more important than Tobey leaving, Sam Raimi. Raimi left too.
He's
the director,
to, yeah.
God, because they had Sam Raimi. I mean, granted, this movie was making him probably $1 trillion, and after Spider-Man 3, which I think might be just as bad as Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Spider-Man 3 was so bad.
It was rough.
There was actually one point where they kludged in like, are Mary Jane and Spidey's, you know, best friend, enemy guy going to do a cute little sing-along dance scene? No, that couldn't be in a Spider-Man movie. And they did it to, like, a horrible song. They're like, yeah, we're just singing and dancing to it. Like, and I'm like, is this going on in a Spider-Man? And then I'm like, yes, this is.
That whole
because this movie is horrible.
Yeah, that dance scene was, I could not believe it. Sitting in the theater, I remember I looked at Lisa and just said, I can't even believe this is happening.
Like, what that's something that goes on in a Sandra Bullock movie, a Reese Witherspoon movie, where everyone just stops and, hey, let's just sing along and do a little, you got a little this going. I'm dancing, by the way. You can't see it. And that just kind of nailed the coffin. I'm like, Spider-Man's done. I don't care if they come out with a 4. There's no reason to see it. They can't.
They have plans to do 6 of them. But originally, the original cast was signed on. And the fact that now some of them drops out and they're like, well, we're doing it anyway. Like, I just have issue. I take issue
with
that.
Let me, bringing it back to comic book talk, which is appropriate. I was a huge comic book fan. And I know you were a pretty big comic book fan. And I can tell you that when I loved comic books and read them, I didn't care about the character, I cared about the creative team. In other words, whoever John Byrne was writing and or penciling for is what I was buying and reading.
Oh, yeah, and that's never the way I consumed it.
Well, but my point is that if you really care about the director and or the actors or the writers, then I think, I mean, to me, that's a similar way that I've always thought about comic books. Like, I don't necessarily like the West Coast Avengers, but I loved it when John Byrne did it because the how is more important than the what.
Well, and you could apply that same thought process to bands, you know. So when you have a successful band that swaps, that the singer leaves, and they're like, "Forget, we'll just get another singer and keep going," you can see why people react to that one way or the other.
I mean, sports could be this. There's a certain sports fans that are fans of individuals, whether they be managers, coaches, or players. And to me, that makes a heck of a lot more sense than voting for a uniform.
Yeah.
You know, like, why am I going to root for the Knicks just because they're the Knicks? It's not the same people that I liked 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think that you follow the creative team, not necessarily the character.
Right. Okay, which does make me think, and this we won't get into this, but I'm very interested in the latest. It's getting destroyed as all of his movies do. But the latest Terry Gilliam movie, the last movie that
It looks incredible.
I think it looks really cool. The last movie that Heath Ledger was in, and they actually had to cast other people because
Dr. Parnassus, yeah. The Imaginarium.
It looks really
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Yeah. It's not getting great reviews, but
really?
but
his movies seldom do.
That's true.
So
ugh. The one movie commercial that has to stop that has been ruining my life is this Lovely Bones. Have you seen the commercials for Lovely Bones?
Because having two daughters.
Yes. Well, I can't even wrap my head around that. But
I agree.
But not only that, it's just poorly done. First of all, it's poorly done. It's over the top. It's cheesy. Mark Wahlberg, he's a nice guy. He's good in certain things, but he can't act to save his life. In a role where he has to be like a normal guy. Like if you saw 1 second of that, the last movie by M. Night Shyamalan, where he's supposed to be playing like a grade school like math teacher, where he just doesn't have it in him. Like he's never been in that situation where he has to be able to like talk to people and be like he's like, hey everybody, I just want to really get everyone together. Like that's not him, and he has to do that. And in this movie, the commercials, he's like the same thing. He's like, this is kind of like a nice everyday dad. No, he's Mark Wahlberg. He's a guy who, you know, a lot different.
I can't even get that far in the commercial club because, like you, being a father of a young kid, man, like that stuff, it makes my knees buckle. Like when and you know what is really really pathetic, and it probably has happened for the last 15, 20 years, and I've never noticed it until now that I'm a father, is the way that CNN.com or MSNBC or the television news stations that the story is all about this very like very minute detail of someone losing a kid. Like, you know, there's a hurricane or there's a tornado.
Oh, yeah, right.
Or there's a war and like hundreds of thousands of people are affected, but they personalize it with like they put a face on it. Like a little girl was ripped out of the arms of the mother and drowned or you know kills you. Like you can't read like that. You read that and it ruins the rest of my day. And certainly, you know, it sounds kind of selfish because it did a lot more than ruin the day of the people that are involved in the story. So that kind of sounds selfish, but it's just so sensational for these for these news agencies to do that and know that there are people that are compelled to that because it's so personal and it's so heart-wrenching.
Right.
So what in recapping, don't go see the Lovely Bones.
Okay.
Don't even look at the commercial.
I do have another trailer that I know will spark some
conversation. I have a trailer too.
But before we go there, it's music time.
Is it really? All right, you know, Todd and I just got people depressed with that talk about child endangerment. So why don't we play something very happy and upbeat and a new song by our pal Dawn Landis, who, Todd, you had the pleasure of interviewing a couple years ago on Use Wigs Radio. She's great.
She's always calling.
Hey, yeah, it's like, is your celly blowing up? Because Dawn is just always...
My celly's blowing up, nice.
Dawn Landis has a new album, Sweetheart Rodeo, and she has a great new video. If you go to stereogum.com and look for it there. I don't know if it's anywhere else right now, but it was premiered there. It's called Young Girl. Great video, great song. Here it is, the new Dawn Landis.
To do with you. Did you?
And we're back, people. That was Dawn Landis with Young Girl off her album Sweetheart Rodeo. And you can check out more Dawn Landis at dawnlandis.com. That's L-A-N-D-E-S. Let's get back to trailer talk.
So, Jeff, I wonder if we're going to be talking about the same trailer here. So the other trailer that I watched this morning was...
MacGruber! No, what? Nothing. Go.
Was for the A-Team?
Yeah, I have that written right here.
Did you see?
I did.
Todd's face. Look at him wince.
Are you excited about that?
Well, the trailer was pretty cool. Did you watch it, Jeff?
I gotta tell you. Wah, wah, wah.
I think the trailer looks cool.
I don't know, Russ. I don't know.
Is the world out of ideas?
That's the thing.
Look, I completely...
For God's sakes.
Don't anger him.
I completely agree.
I cannot speak over you.
I completely agree with that, right?
Yeah.
I completely agree with that sentiment. But that said... you know, this has been done for so many TV shows, so many comic book characters, all those kinds of things. Some have done better than others. And when for instance, going back to our G.I. Joe talk, that trailer looked like crap. I went to go see it out of, you know, childhood curiosity, and it sucked beyond belief. This one, the trailer looks like they could do something cool. So, do you even know who any of the characters are?
No.
Hannibal, Liam Neeson, the guy whose face is the guy who... Did you see The Hangover?
Bradley Cooper.
Is that his name?
Bradley Cooper's in everything right now. You can't stop him. Yeah. He's in every movie.
And I don't know who plays... B.A. I don't know who those guys are. B.A. or Murdoch.
B.A. Baracus is played by Rampage Jackson. And Rampage Jackson is a mixed martial arts fighter. He's not an actor. Hmm. You know what?
Yeah, it was Mr. T, though.
Right,
Mr. T. He was a tough man competition when it was.
I think it was Samuel Jackson a few years ago. He's just like, and he had a great point. He's like, I'm a black actor. I studied acting. Been in 20 years acting. A lot of roles I go up right now. You know who I go up against? Rappers. Guys from sports. Yeah. You know how many of those guys get the roles? Lots of them. I'm just saying. Why don't you give some black roles to some black actors, guys? Because, you know, it's true.
It's true.
Like,
it's very true.
You got to go and get... I mean, granted, you needed a certain type for, you know, like a big, you know, well-defined guy. But, you know, I'm just going to guess that Rampage Jackson isn't the best actor.
Like, his actual name is more ridiculous than Bad Attitude Baracus.
Well, and I'm not saying that this is for the whole movie, but in the trailer, I did not know that. I didn't know who the guy was.
Right.
And there wasn't anything all that offensive in what they showed, but again, it's the trailer.
And then
what is the best TV show made into a movie?
That's a good question.
Can you even think of a good one?
There has to be. I mean, in the pantheon of horrible ones, you could go everything from Lost in Space to
Land of the Lost. Did you see
Land of the Lost is supposed to be so incredibly bad.
That
like,
it's actually...
Like Bewitched bad, you know? Like
He was in that too, wasn't
he? Yeah. He took a precipitous drop from Can Do No Wrong
the
to
Brady
just
Bunch
do...
Brady Bunch movie?
Like, what? Oh, there you go. That was a good one.
That was good?
The first Brady Bunch movie was...
It made fun of itself enough.
The reason why it was cast perfectly... It was funny. I thought it was funny in the fact that Gary Cole, who played the dad, played it with such great humor and self-referential... outlandish fun. Like when the Brady Bunch was originally made, it was ridiculous, but they didn't see themselves as ridiculous.
Right.
This took their ridiculousness and made them kind
of... It was as good as, I guess, a TV show made into a movie.
Oh, you can't beat the Flintstones. That was awesome.
Do you know that the best part about the original Flintstones, and there was a follow-up made with a whole different cast, where it was one of the Baldwin brothers,
like one of the fatter
and
ones, yeah.
Mark Eddy, who's, I think his name is Eddy, who's like a British actor, who got roles playing like, he played Fred, and he had a role as like an American blue-collar dad in a sitcom. And like the women they had were like Rosie O'Donnell, that giantess from that Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, just, it was so bad. but speaking of, Russ, movies made based on TV shows, like, you know, Saturday Night Live probably has the worst track record of just taking one of their crappy characters and making a movie.
Yeah.
So they have a new movie out called MacGruber. It's basically a character who... had a couple skits where he's like, who was the, it's based on...
like MacGyver.
MacGyver.
And
and every sketch, he's about to like defuse the bomb with 10 seconds left, something distracts him, and the bomb always blows up. So now they're basing a whole movie on it, and they're like real excited.
Who plays the character?
I lose interest in the sketch.
Yeah, in the sketch. Like that was my point, right?
Third minute, I'm like, all right.
You know, if you can't get into the sketch, so I watched the trailer, and it's really bad. And you know who's in it, and everyone loves her, and I can't stand her. And I don't know, is there a real dearth of funny women out there that this? She's on Saturday Night Live right now. Kristen
Durst. I think she is funny though.
Oh, I can't stand her.
Did you see a couple weeks ago when she did the extemporaneous singing for the holidays?
No,
it's brilliant.
I doubt it.
I don't know. Who she is.
She's very funny.
She's a one trick pony,
and that's a great sketch.
Mm-hmm. All right, maybe I'll give that a shot.
I haven't watched that.
Basically, the premise was she and another guy. They're singers, and they forgot that they were supposed to be on the show. They didn't have their stuff prepared, so they actually begin to sing Christmas songs that they're making up as they're singing it. And he's making words up, and she's looking at him, trying to sing it along with him, and it really is very funny because she's actually doing that. It's really great. Just put a link.
Tomorrow, I am gonna watch it, and I'll let you know if I laugh.
Okay, you can be hard on it.
Okay, just to give you a rundown of past
Ship's movie.
Past Saturday Night Live movie greats, Wayne's World and the Blues Brothers were the two that made money, and that empowered them to make more.
We should go back and forth.
All right, though.
Okay, let's go back and forth, Todd. You and Russ are now going to name Saturday Night Live movies.
Stuart Smalley Saves the World.
I got that one.
Coneheads.
There you go.
Right, I forgot about that. There was a Pat movie.
It's Pat.
One of the Dana Carvey.
There was that turtle move. Was that like, Saturday Night Live? There was a Night at the Roxbury.
Yes, Night at the Roxbury.
Oh, the cheerleaders? Did they have their own movie?
No, it was in the works, but it never happened. You're missing one, which actually I watched. Not so bad, because I love the character so much. And Russ, it's a lady.
Oh, the Ladies' Man.
The Ladies' Man.
Ladies' Man had a movie. Was it good?
It was. Actually,
that was the only good thing he did on that show.
I love Tim Meadows. Really? I think Tim Meadows is. I think
you talk about a one trick. He's a no trick pony.
Oh, how dare you?
Seriously, right? Am I wrong? He has no.
They didn't give him time to do anything. He was the waiter.
He was there for like 10 years.
Right, and he was the guy. He got as much time as Tracy Jordan did when he was on the show.
Got more than he deserved. Tracy Jordan is hysterical on that show.
Yeah, in the limited capacity
so
we're used to.
What do you think, Russ?
I love Tim Meadows.
I have not spent enough time with Saturday Night Live.
He seems like a nice guy. I don't mean to
say love him.
But wait, is that the whole list? There seems like there was more.
There were more. There was a superstar. Superstar. You know the girl, her name?
Oh, man.
Mary Catherine Gallagher.
That's right.
Yeah, there were a lot of really crap movies. And I think Lorne Michaels took a big break, and he's like, I can't put out another crap one until I get the right thing. But then he came out with this, and I guarantee you MacGruber's not going to do well.
It's got a song.
Are we done with our movie trailer reviews?
Well, potentially not.
Oh, well.
We'll see. Right. I didn't have any more.
Okay.
This next song is by a Philadelphia band.
Wow.
And this band recently recorded a Day Trotter session as well, although this does not come from that session. This comes from, I believe, their most recent album. The band's called Drink Up Buttercup. The album's called Even Think, and the song is called Even Think. Drink Up Buttercup.
Even Think.
Everybody got a life that nobody knows. They keep it locked up tight and the love it close. The friend won't believe that they did it anyway. When they go away for the weekend. You're really who you are when no one's around. You touch yourself up ever and you watch what you want anyway. Thank you.
Drink Up Buttercup, a Philly band. And if for the Philly listeners and fans, in early February, I believe February 2nd, they were playing in Westchester.
What was with the... So Jeff was doing the Pearl Jam.
I was.
Even Think version, like Even Flow.
Yeah.
What was it with bands around that time where all of them had... I heard somebody call it the mule voice. They all sang like... Whoa, whoa. It was like... Remember Collective Soul with that... Like, they all sang, like, back in their throat like that. It was Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, and Collective Soul. And like, they all wanted to sound that way with this, like, super effective...
No, Soundgarden was the opposite.
Yeah, but...
He could sing his ass off.
They kind of sang, like, in their mouth.
Yeah, you're right.
Weird, affected singing.
Well, you know what I think it was? I think Pearl Jam was the first to really come out with that. And it was just emulation. You know what I mean? It was like Stone Temple Pilots. Like,
Seven Mary Three.
All those, like, that's a Chips reference.
Yeah.
What?
Seven Mary Three.
Is it Chips?
That's a band name, but that was based on a Chips. That was one of their calls, like Seven Mary Three. Chips.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, you're right. But back,
do you as a musician, do you?
Is there a term?
Do you disapprove of
the
that?
Mule?
Do you not like the sound?
Well, it's not singing. It's ridiculous.
No, it isn't. There isn't anything like that. Yeah, it's just like it's so affected. And I guess you can say that about anybody. I guess you could say like Tom Waits pretty much hams it up when he sings like he just gargled glass, you know. But so I guess you could give that to, you could give that to the first band who did it. So you could give that to Pearl Jam. But then for those other bands to do the same thing and for it to suddenly be the grunge sound was just like, give me a break. Another singer that sounds like this? Because the thing of it is that, to Jeff's point, to some degree, it's not really singing.
No,
like
it's not.
It's almost like you know, if you make fun of a Broadway play, you're going to be going, oh, da, 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 da,
da. And
it's the same thing. Like, if you want to, it was like at that time period, if I want to be in a grunge band, I just have to go, roar, 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 roar. Like, that was kind of what it was.
Well, right now, talk about affected, like, I've harped on this, and I just can't stand that Kings of Leon. Oh, they're so, that guy chews words. He just chews his voice like she's the male equivalent to Cher. Like, and that, I've never in my life heard a more blatant attempt for an anthem than that horrible song. Oh, they lost every bit of cred they ever, I hate them so much. You guys want to do some tech talk?
Sure.
And I think this is something you'll both be into, because I have a big question. Now that, like, Todd, now that you don't have all the disposable income to throw at gadgets because you have a son, and Russ, you'll be having a baby, so you'll have less money.
I shouldn't.
Oh,
doesn't mean
still
I do
doing.
Not.
Oh, jeez. On January...
He's going to have to get a scholarship, Jeff.
Yeah. On January 27th, the Lord on High, Steve Jobs, is coming out with an announcement, guys. And this has been the big talk in the Mac arena of geekitude for the past 2 months. The iSlate, the Mac tablet... You guys excited for it? Do you see a need for it? Do you even know what it is? Do you care?
So is it going to be like a super-sized iPhone? Is that the idea?
Basically, it's going to be an oversized 10-inch in size, touchscreen, play music videos. I think the main reason they're launching this and is because they want to get involved in the e-reader market.
Mm-hmm.
Kindle, the Nook.
Well, everything that you said that it's supposed to be is, of course, a guess at this point.
Right.
And it's
right.
all speculation.
The interesting thing is that they, you know, now that everybody's getting all hyped up about this announcement, they've kind of correlated it with what people assumed the iPhone would be
right.
before it came out. And you know, some people are saying, look, what the iPhone actually is, nobody nailed on the head. Like, they just thought it was like, you know... Basically, when people were mocking up what they thought it looked like, they were just doing iPods with the wheel and everything that had a phone function.
Right.
You know? Like, nobody expected the touch screen the way it is and all that kind of stuff. So they're saying if Apple continues along that trajectory, then there should be things about the tablet that we cannot think of.
There better be.
Yeah, hopefully.
Or else it doesn't have that, like, you know, that magic to it that when he comes out and he's like, not only blah, 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 but it can... And then you want to hear
he'll
the
like, pee on it.
Oh, right, right, like something like that.
Oh my gosh.
There's got to be some incredible wow factor, or people are going to be disappointed because there's so many.
But as a teacher, I'm excited about the potential that there would be something that would be kind of a computer reader hybrid, because, you know, textbooks textbooks are archaic.
Yeah.
They're already obsolete as far as I'm concerned, yet they still, you know, kids still carry them around. We still spend thousands of dollars, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year per school district.
Right.
So it would be great that you could have all the books that you need and on a tablet and also be able to do your word processing and, you know, scientific computation and things.
Yeah, and it needs to be in a device that appeals to the masses because, you know, speaking of archaic, the Kindle feels archaic. Have you picked up one and played with it?
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it that doesn't... It feels like it is very much a transition gadget.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely not the end state. It's in black and white. It does weird things like it has to refresh every in between every page where it flashes black and, like,
ooh,
just stuff that feels like, this isn't there yet, you know? And the thing about the Kindle is that it really feels like it's for people who don't like books very much. Because, you know, I want to carry, right now at least, because the Kindle doesn't take this away from me, I want to have a book. I want to crack a book open, be able to take that with me wherever I want, you know, crease it, dog-ear it, all that kind of stuff.
But you can do the equivalent of dog-earing and highlighting.
Yeah, you can do the equivalent, but it's not appealing. Let me put it that way.
You have been raised with books, though, so there's a certain romanticism that perhaps you feel towards books, but what... Our kids that will grow up in a world with e-reader type devices will not have that same connection. And furthermore, I think it's going to be interesting when it comes to technology. Like, you know, new technology is always kind of a flashy way to do the analog thing at first. So right now, e-readers are very passive. But I wonder when the time will come that authors begin to write books differently to capitalize on the kind of computer or e-experience.
You mean like...
Like Choose Your Own Adventure or something. No,
oh,
but,
no.
No, but no, I think oh, there could no. there will be
to fight the
there
dragon.
Will be lots of things
you can do. Me too.
There'll be lots of other things that you can do with a fairly non-linear type of book. You know, and
but you're getting into the realm of video games then just.
Then it's
Zork.
What's Zork? Idiot.
We'll see. All I'm saying is I think that 15 years from now, books will not be a major part of the literature market, and B, people will begin to make decisions based on the way that the work is being consumed.
It's going to be the medium and not the message. I disagree with that.
I don't think
it's going that way.
If we can rewind, Todd, I hope to God the average successful author of books never opts for the Choose Your Own Adventure when you get to chapter 13 where you're like, did he get on the bus or did he decide to walk?
All I'm saying
to
is
make
that
Atticus
if there
Finch
are,
take the case.
Yes.
If there are other things that can happen, why wouldn't people explore that? Like if there's kind of a greater
I just rely on the creativity of the authors I like to entertain me and not make me work for it and be the one who's creating.
The same thing you said about color. You're the guy that just said you didn't like black and white movies. Well, don't you think filmmakers, when color was introduced, thought about making movies very differently than they did previous to color?
Yeah, but it's not the end user who's deciding on where it's going.
No, but my point is that the technology, suddenly you have color available to you, well, suddenly you're making very different decisions when you're making a movie. And all I'm saying is that when you have the potential to do very different things in the reading experience, then people are going to be writing towards that experience.
Yeah, you probably will get like E.E. Cummings type characters that do very weird things. Layout wise and stuff like that could never be achieved, like especially like with 3D and stuff like that, like all kinds of stuff that maybe could never have been achieved before, where they get to a certain important phrase and it's actually like, you know, 3D that you can look around it and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
of a picture book, why couldn't there be video embedded into the story itself, and why is that a bad thing?
But you're right, that blurs the line between video games.
Yeah, you know, then it's just really not a book anymore, and it's not literature. It's something different.
Yeah,
it's a hybrid. Not that it's bad.
People probably said that about the printing press, though. It's not a book. You know, it's not a book if a scribe doesn't write it. It's not a book. It's this mass-produced newspaper type of thing, but it's not a book.
Right. But it's true. But I'm saying is it's going to be something different than a book. And I can totally envision, you're right, where you get to a point and you're like, oh, I'm going to click this hyperlink and it's going to take me to, wow, this video just popped up. Or he referenced ragtime music in the 20s. Click that link and it's a video
right,
of like Jelly Roll Morton.
Hyperlinks,
right.
Yeah. Well,
encyclopedic.
You know,
stuff.
Right.
Absolutely.
Especially for authors who are hyper-referential in their works.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Or you know, like, what if there are books that could expand or contract based on the interest of the reader? You know, it can still be completely fiction, but if you're reading a book and you want more backstory, then it can get more backstory, and the book itself can, you know, paragraphs.
So you're saying extensive footnotes, they would be.
And talking about blurring the line between book and video game, I mean, you're a guy, I consider you a writer, and I think you consider yourself a writer, but you write basically for a website,
right,
which you turned into a book.
Not that I know of. Yeah, there's a book?
Yeah, there are scores. Most of our listeners have the book.
I think, you know, that I wasn't even aware. I think these Chinese people took the content and made a book.
I haven't seen
dime one from that. Oh, boy.
Well, you know what? Only time will tell, I guess. When we do podcast number 4221,
that's right,
we can revisit this conversation.
And I just pictured the three of us, like that scene in Star Wars where Princess Leia, Luke, you know, the little Princess Leia, what is she? Luke, you must save us all.
Help me use wigs. You're my only hope.
There you go. Thank you. That's what I hope to. Are we going to play a song now?
Yes.
All right. I think this is the last song, right?
Correct.
Would this be song number 5 of podcast 71? Year 2010, of our Lord Jesus Christ.
2010 will be the year that we celebrate 5 years.
5 years, that's
and
right.
It's only a couple months away.
Wow.
We've been doing this for 5 years.
Look at that, kids. All right, let's see. We're going to end this. This is probably my favorite song of 2009. And I told these guys, the first line of this song has been in my head for the past 2 months, and I can't get rid of it. That's not a bad thing. I like it. This is Subset of the World by Malcolm Middleton. And we're back, people. That was Malcolm Middleton, and that was a Subset of the World. And I'm really into just Scottish rock and singers because I just love their voice. I love that Scottish brogue.
Pretty soon everybody's going to be trying to sing like that.
Yeah, that's going to be the new mule voice, Russ, there. guys, one last thing before we get to shouts. Of course, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Quickly. It's been beaten to death, but I find it fascinating, and I love it, and I love every day reading about our boy Coco getting completely screwed by that giant chin jackass Jay Leno. And all I'm going to say on it is all Jay Leno had to do was say, no, I'm not going to do 11:30, you know?
Yeah, and it's really
That's
funny.
That's all he had to do.
Did you see, like, so they have interviews with him, and he really acts like he's this, like, you know...
Victim.
Yeah, victim, and he's like, and he's trying to be a nice guy, and he's like, and, you know, and then they said to me, well, maybe you can have a show back, and I was like, well, I'd like to keep my people working. Like, tries to say it like that. I'm like, yeah. Give me a break. Because he knows that that's going to play well with Middle America. He's like, that's right. Jay's
oh, yeah, he knows.
The people working.
Did you read Conan's press release?
Freaking Conan's press release was great.
It was beautiful.
Have
so
you been
well
and have you been watching every night since then? The vitriol Conan is spewing is awesome. It's so great. It's like you say to yourself, how can NBC let this go on? But obviously, they're whores. The only thing they care about is ratings.
Yeah.
They know he's completely... I mean, destroy... He came out at the end of a Friday night. He just got done ripping NBC, like ripping Leno, ripping everything. And he's just like... Completely, like, you can tell, just tired. He's like, I got no more. And he's like, oh, and by the way, NBC has lost over $200 million with their Olympics so far, securing the rights, and are not going to regain one cent of it. Like, it was a non sequitur, and he really didn't have a joke. He just wanted to get it out there because he wants to kill NBC.
Did you see the ads on Craigslist that I believe he
that he posted
there?
Himself? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's trying to sell.
Very funny.
Nice show, yeah,
yeah.
But I think the silver lining is regroup, come back on Fox, come back on a network that will allow him to not have to pander to Middle America. Because I was very critical in the past few months of the new Conan show; hasn't been that good. And, you know, like you say, you give him a year to find it, get his feet, to find his voice, you know what I mean? Where he can deal with having to, you know, have the onus of the Johnny Carson experience and have to keep that going, but still have the
that's
great...
That's not necessarily Middle America. That's just, that's also the different time slot. It's a very different audience. Not necessarily... It's not a geographic thing. It's also... It's,
well, no,
it's
I think the time period and the whole show itself was very laser-focused on pandering to the wider... swath of America than just than a particular sense of humor, and he had to go in there and tailor his sense of humor and tone it down. And I think what he was hoping for, give him 2 years, that he could win them over by putting bits of his sense of humor into the kind of mild stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working because it was. I watched. You know, I'm a big Conan fan. I tape it every night and I watch it. And it was uncomfortable.
It seemed diluted.
It seemed very diluted.
Yeah.
He could tell he was holding back on a lot. Andy wasn't jiving. And then these past 2 weeks, they're on fire. So you take that fire, you bring it to Fox, who are just like, you two go on there. Who cares? Be Conan. Be Andy. Be, you know, all your characters and stuff like that. And I think there's a silver lining. So, yeah, let's do some shouts, people.
A band that I probably should have found out a couple of years ago, but just kind of stumbled upon recently, is a band called Yaysayer.
Yeah,
you guys know those guys? They're fantastic.
Yeah,
they're out of Brooklyn. They have a lot of like Middle Eastern influence and stuff like that. They have a new album out called Odd Blood, which is excellent. I'm not as familiar with it yet, but I've spent some time with their previous album, All Our Symbols, and it's awesome. You know, so they're just really
symbols like
yeah.
Hey, do yourself a favor if you like them. Do you know the Blogatech takeaway shows?
Yes, I do.
Are you familiar?
No.
So it's a French hosted and based website, and it's kind of like Daytrotter, but it's a video.
Video.
And they
yeah.
put these indie bands in kind of outdoor, non-traditional spaces, like in a hotel, in a bathroom, in a movie theater, in an elevator, and they sing their songs on a train. And there are a lot of really incredible artists doing it, and the acoustics are incredible.
Cool.
And it's really just, and they're just recording them doing their thing. And Yaysayer does one, if I'm not mistaken, in the metro, like through the subway system tunnels.
Right.
And it's gorgeous. Mm. I mean, it's really, really beautiful. Yeah, and they're just kind of walking through it, and there's just like a drummer with two sticks.
Is that the same show where they had Andrew Bird just walking through the street? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
There's
so look that up. You really like it.
Okay.
What's it again?
It's Blog Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's called, if you look in takeaway shows, mm-hmm. that's the American translation. It's like Le Prêt-à-Porter or something like that in French.
Ready to wear.
it's something in French.
Todd Lee, what are you going
to
shout?
Well, I'm interested to know what our listeners and you guys think of Contra, the new Vampire Weekend album.
I've only listened to it like twice.
Well, I posted on some social networking sites that I felt like Vampire Weekend's new album, Contra, was by far their second best album.
Well, it's getting a lot of good reviews.
Well, actually. It is getting good reviews. And I actually had some friends whose opinions I respect a lot kind of fight with me about that this is better than their self-titled debut. But I'm not, and this is not like, I didn't listen to a sample or two. Like, I've listened to it pretty intensely for about 2 weeks over and over and over again, and I just can't get into it like I did the first album. I mean, I really sunk my teeth into the first album and really loved it.
I think it's, do you like the Decemberists?
Uh-huh.
I think that it's kind of along that line. Like, I think it, for people who like the Decemberists, who like Andrew Bird, like, I think it's, you know, it's sometimes too intellectual, but there's tons of references to things, and it's very dense and deep in that way, which sometimes is cool and sometimes is a tad pretentious. But I think
I haven't paid maybe enough attention to the lyrics.
Yeah,
thing,
but
the music is not as strong. I don't feel like it's
the catchy. Music. Yeah, you know what?
They remind me of children's music. I'm just
yeah, I know you're not a fan.
Ugh.
No, well, you also didn't like how everybody jumped on. It's like, ugh. I just cannot get on board with the Arctic Monkeys because...
Oh, I like them.
But, you know what? I haven't listened to them. But just all that blow up and everybody talking about them as the next big thing, like, that turns me off.
See, it didn't, it's just like, I look at them, I heard, you know, we played the Oxford Comma on our show a couple years ago. It's a cute song, but that's fine. I can handle one cute song, but when you're just four guys wearing cardigans and singing cute songs and like you're Noah and the Whale and that, I'm like, I'm not a child.
It's actually a strong kind of world music influence is what you're, I think.
Yeah,
which
I don't like that. I don't
you're,
like,
you're
yeah,
perceiving as children's music, though.
It's the same thing.
anything that's
well,
that's
you know,
like
you know what I love about that.
Years of tradition.
I would say I'd say the dumbest terminology in the history of music are those two words put together.
World music.
Yes.
Well,
do you think people
as Americans use
that ethnocentric term like that?
A non-Anglo kind of Western American. Even
it's
American
music but, that all those silly, those 4 billion
well,
people play.
They use instruments that are not in the traditional American band. How do you like that?
Right, like primitive instruments, are you saying?
Yeah, like a lute.
I only like a lute if Sting devotes an entire album to playing it. That did pump his ass. Speaking of, if I could go
it's
off
like
of...
South African, really. I mean, their influence
it's
is
fine.
South African. Kind of, you know, Paul Simon is similar to...
I'd rather listen to South African people do it.
Okay.
Or Bella Fleck.
Jeffy, your shouts.
Well, I want to go. You went from your shout to you went to blog your Blog Attack, right? That was off of what that Russ said he
Yesayer.
Liked.
Yesayer.
But there was a. All right, so you went to Blog Attack. I'm going to go off to Black Cab Sessions. Very similar to the Blog Attack. It's I believe it's a British site. It's just bands. They go into Britain. They play in the back of a taxi cab.
Yeah, I saw Richard Thompson do that.
Richard Thompson was... He was my favorite out of all of them. Maximo Park was great. He was there, sang like an old... I think it wasn't even like an old... one of his old songs. I think it was just an old classic English song. And he had like two other women singing with him.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, just like... You know, it's a cappella guitar. And like the guy from Maximo Park, the lead singer, can really sing. So, you know, when it's just like him belting out a song just with an acoustic and they're just driving around London, I think it's a nice kind of neat... You know, gimmick that actually works well, and you get a. So that's Black Cab Sessions. You can go there. Todd, did you have another shout, or was that just a.
I was actually calling up the Yesayer segment to show you, but I couldn't help but think that, like John Popper wouldn't be able to perform in the.
He's
the
tiny guy now.
Oh, he's a tiny guy.
Did you know he got stomach? He got like his stomach stapled like 10 years ago.
I did not get a phone call about that. No.
Quick, two shouts. Just got this today from Dave McGurgan, my friend McGee, who gets all the Who's Coming to the World Cafe for Friday afternoon free at noon sessions. Guess who will be there on January 29th? This isn't supposed to be posted yet, but we have this information. Ted Leo and the Pharmacist.
Okay.
Friday, January 29th, 2010, free at noon concert. So go check that out. Also like to give a shout out to the new visitphilly.com website.
Yeah, I saw that you were a big fan of the new layout.
I think it was nice because Philly took a lot of crap because one of the city of Philadelphia came out with a new logo a while back and it was horrendous. It was like
it wasn't art. It was just like a month ago.
Yeah, it was like clip art and they spent like all this money.
Ugly.
Star Design Group, horrible job.
Did they spend a lot of money? I thought that it was donated to the city.
I think it was donated, but they spent a lot of time.
It was hideous though. They spent a lot of time and energy like promoting it and unveiling it.
So luckily, we bounced back with visitphilly.com, and that's why our friend Greg Hoy and his Happy Coggers put that site together.
Nice.
And I think that's great. I mean, if you look at any other like city website, there's Kick's butt. I mean, it really speaks well of Philadelphia. It's a nice brand and just a really cool site. And lastly, we got Ted Leo. We got the Happy Coggers, was in Philadelphia. A website I like, it's called the Shrakeshenary. this little chap, Scott Shrake, has his own dictionary called the Shrakeshenary. He had a very...
I've heard of him.
Oh, yeah, he's funny every now and then. He's a little demanding, but he has a new word today, step friend, which I like. And I think it's a great... I think we can all... kind of get involved with a step friend. A step friend is a friend of a friend, one you didn't necessarily choose for yourself.
I have a bunch of those.
Those kind of hang out, and you're like, oh yeah, he's not really a friend, he's a step friend.
Nice.
I like that. And lastly, I meant to check in on this with our tech segment, but pretty soon Twitter is just going to be overrun and completely just obliterated by this Foursquare. Are you guys aware of Foursquare? It must stop.
Is it like people can tell where other people are?
As far as I can tell, it's a game that whenever you go to a new place, you say, yay, I'm there. I'm at Starbucks. Yay. And if you're there enough, you check in, you become, yay, I'm the mayor of Starbucks.
Oh, I heard about
right?
that.
So you get the idea of it. I don't care. Whatever silly game you want to play is fine. Keep it on your silly game site. But when the updates keep coming to my Twitter account, it's got to stop. So I'm going to say right now, I don't care who you are. I like a lot of you. If I get more than 2 Foursquare updates from you tomorrow, you are defriended.
Is that the hashtag, Foursquare?
I don't know. No, it's just, it's a hashtag, but it's not even, it's just a URL.
Oh.
So you'd be like, Sam is now the mayor of Cuban Coffee. And you're like, I don't care. Anyway, the problem is, and here's a fix. I bring problems out, Russ and Todd, correct? I bitch a lot. But don't I always have a fix?
Most
no,
sometimes.
Sometimes that's true. My fix is Facebook. If somebody is playing Mafia Wars, that's fine. But if your web experience is overrun with their updates, what do?
You just hide them.
You just say hide.
Can't
Todd,
hide application?
Hide Todd's Mafia Wars, right? So Twitter, all they have to do is when someone keeps posting with this Foursquare thing, just say hide all Foursquare updates. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't anger me. And trust me, right now, you guys are probably like, oh, I don't care. But when all your bored friends who need to tell everybody they're, you know, doing this nonsense, you'll get on board soon enough. I didn't want to end the show on a negative tone, but I did.
But at least you would kind of have a call to arms. You have a solution.
Right. But let's take a positive way. Let's end the show with 2010, March 19th. World Cafe Live upstairs, Use Wigs Live Part 2. It's going to be fantastic.
We'll see you there, friends.